Welcome, everybody. 61C. This, let me push start on my slides first. You gotta say start when you start the whole thing. 61C, the best course, and this is annoying me in the background. I move it to there. There. 61C. Woo! Let's get some love. Woo! 61C is easily the best course at Cal, right? It's easily the best course at Cal, which is, by the way, I don't know if you know this, the number one public school in the country, right? Arguably the number one computer science program. We're tied for one and two. We're tied for number one with Stanford, MIT, but okay, number one, right? The nice thing is we're not webcast, so I can kind of say anything. Okay, so tied for number one, and within that, we have easily the top students in the country. Number one program, number one students. Easily, you are getting the number one experience to learn machine structures in the country. Let's give yourselves a hand. Berkeley, woo! Yes! Some love. All right. I'm going to bring this kind of enthusiasm to every class. I hope you all guys show up. We don't have webcasting, so you don't get to watch this on the video from your comfort of your home. You got to come up. You got to show up. We're going to have these wonderful clickers to have dynamic student response stuff. Let me start with some news of the day. I always have you walk into class in a good mood by finding some awesome animation. I really am a big fan of animation, so I'm going to have some small animations every class before you come in, so get here early if you can. Cut your last class early to get here for the whole thing. I start at 4. The news of the day will mostly be technology, but it might be relevant to this course in any way. It just so happens that over the break, I don't know if you know, the governor, as they say, can we get some TAs to move this away? This is starting to annoy me. Can we have strong TAs? Let's go. We're lifting this. Let's give a hand for our TAs, ladies and gentlemen. TAs, ladies and gentlemen. Woo! Okay. Don't hurt yourself. All right, put it there. Perfect. Now I can walk, and I can kind of do a right in the face to the front row. I love it. Okay, here we go. So the news of the day is that the governor decided in a historic, last year, the pain, Berkeley's name in the news, not so great, all the funding is droning out, all the brain talent is going to, all the talent, the faculty is going to leave because of funding from the state, because of property taxes, all the stuff is a problem, California $20 billion in the hole, all that stuff. However, the governor says the following: choosing UCs over prisons, this is a historic and transforming realignment of California's priorities. And then if you read, this is a New York Times article, right? You read the bottom, they said the following line: the protests at the UCs were the tipping point. Our university system is going to get the support it deserves. Amen, brother. Amen. Love this. All right. Woo! I could not talk about this, right? I had to talk about this in the first lecture. So let's go right into it. Two handouts. Everyone should have the two handouts. In the top right, I usually say how many handouts I have. So there are two for today. And there are copies up at the front and should be copies in the back, I hope. If not, come to the front and grab them if you came in late. One of them is the slides. Why do I hand you slides? Because I don't believe in people taking dictation in my class. This class is about learning and listening. At least lecture is about learning and listening. So please don't worry about writing things down. Everything that's on the slides is in your handout. Use the handout to make the extra notes that I might go off on a tangent and go off and say some really cool stuff. That's where you start taking notes. But for the most part, you're not writing, you're listening. I should see all the eyes here looking up. And the future, by the way, TA handout help, let's have them in the back too, so people can also move their way to the back. We have 300 students in 61C today. Okay? This room holds 375, I think. So for the most part, we're almost full. It's pretty exciting. This is the most in 61C in about 5 years. I don't remember a time. It's really exciting. It's really, really exciting. It's also the first time that the non-lab-based course has been taught for 2 years, so I'm back. I always want to start with this. It is not just the Dan Garcia show. I inherited 61C from professors and TAs who had worked on the course before me. It wasn't a course I invented. It was a course I inherited. I co-taught it with Dave Patterson. Since then, in the last N years, the following faces have made significant improvements to the course. In fact, I didn't have enough room to have all the people, but I certainly want to thank all the TAs and all the professors who I hope are listed here, and faculty who have added to the excellence of this course. And so I am just kind of continue to add to the excellence of this course. These guys are amazing, and thanks to them for making this course as great as it is, and I hope it's as great for you as it has been for the students in the past. This course, by the way, has some of the highest student worthwhile. You know, the students rate the teacher, teaching effectiveness, and they also rate, in the HKN, they also rate worthwhile course. It has some of the highest numbers of the entire division. So people realize that this is a great course. You're going to learn a lot of stuff in here. We'll talk about that today in the first day. Where does it fit in? You might ask yourself, this is an old org chart. That's that prerequisite chart says you take CS3 or some programming, then you go to 621A. Hopefully you've all done that. Then in the olden days, you used to go, this is, you know, 2000, 2001, it's almost 10 years old. You go to 621B and then 621C. So it's kind of the, I usually get people who are, you know, second term freshmen, first term sophomores, second term sophomores, depending on where they start in this process. Well, CSB is no longer prerequisite. On the official, we still have a lot of email talking about this just today. On the official line, it says you need to have some C language. So Java or C++ or C before taking this. But the problem is, we teach you C. So I don't know why that's a prerequisite, and I'm going to fight for you that if you guys came in straight from A, you should be able to go into C. So I'm going to try to do that and teach C in a way that you can go straight from A to C. Yeah, power to people. Let's bring it up. Let's get the love. Okay. In fact, I'm actually going to ask you a question of how much programming you have in our first instantiation of using our clickers, and that'll be in a couple of slides from now. So get your clickers ready, but not right now, but get your clickers ready in a moment or two. Okay. So I first want to ask a major question. This course is going to teach you how computers work and how to design computers. And so you might ask yourself, are computers smart from a point of view of a programmer? And you look at this and you say, well, look, you can do higher order functions where you can pass a function in as an argument. That's crazy smart. You have automatic memory management. I mean, you don't have to worry about where the storage is. Crazy smart. You have structures that allow you to kind of leverage. You're not just programming in ones and zeros, as people did years and years and years ago, or by setting switches. That's how you used to program the old ENIAC. You would set switches. No, that's not how you do it. You have really high-level commands. So definitely computers are smart. But the other side of that, well, wasn't there a recent movie, The Dark Knight, where you had a guy with two faces, and one face was the normal face, and one side was the face, right? Remember this one? What was this guy? Two-face guy? What was his name? Two-face guy. Hey, oh, called Two-face over here. All right. So the other person, the other face, that was this side. That was this side, right? But this side, okay, no. This person argues, no, Dan. The reality is computers are made up of basic elements, basic operators, and or not, which is that's true. No memory management at the basic low level, right? The system doesn't know that. You have to build that as a layer, and you're using that layer in the previous slide, but the computer doesn't come with that out of the box. And at the real low level, you basically have zeros and ones and voltage on or off. So this person says computers are dumb. Who's right? They both are, right? There's two perspectives of the whole thing. The idea is you have abstraction and library support that makes computers smart, but really at the lowest level, computers are dumb. So they're both smart and dumb. With library support, they're smart. So what are machine structures? What you're looking at here is, in some sense, the hierarchy from top to bottom of abstraction. Okay? At the top level, you're dealing with an application. You maybe have a browser, which has possibly been compiled and assembled to run. You have an operating system that's handling file I/O and memory and all that kind of thing. And that's all in the software layer. Then you have this really thick orange, pink, off-red layer. Why is it so thick? Isn't it just a normal abstraction boundary? Yes, it is. But why did Dan choose the line size to be so big? What's the critical thing about that line before you go software to hardware? What's so critical there? What's a better way to say that? Why is that line thick? Why is that an important abstraction line? How much is that line worth? What I mean is, if you were to be able to somehow build something here, you somehow reach into the future, you go into Skynet, you come out and you bring back this amazing device able to run and support this instruction. Am I a little hot? I'm getting a little feedback here. Able to support that instruction set architecture, which could be the Motorola 68000 instruction set architecture, could be the Intel 80x86 instruction set architecture. If you can go to the future and bring back for no cost and be able to deliver, you know, billions of these things that runs this, how much do you think you'd make? That's really fast. That's faster than anything that we have today, say by going into the quantum world or going into, you know, some other cool technology that no one's invented yet and producing this. How much money do you think you'd make by, say, oh no, replacing Intel, AMD, and everybody else who's making chips? Billions. Way, way in the high billions of dollars, right? This is a line that defines the hardware-software boundary. This is where Intel stops and the software, say, you know, Microsoft, begins, right? So that's a really important boundary. It's also really important that you get the instruction set architecture right. If you have a flawed instruction set architecture, then you have people building hardware that's flawed and trying to deal with that. So it's really important from the design point of view that you design a really clean one. Okay? We're going to actually design one ourselves. We're going to talk about a really nice pedagogical one, as well as have you play with one yourself. You're going to build hardware that supports an instruction set architecture we're going to give you in project 2, 3. Right. All right. So below this, processor, memory, I/O systems, you might not know what any of these words mean. By the end of this class, you will know what every single piece of this is. Data path and control, digital design, circuit design, and then transistors. 61C doesn't go to circuit design or transistors and doesn't go much above the compiler and assembler point, but it's all the middle stuff, right? You probably understand 61A level stuff up here, and you may or may not have taken some EE courses to understand stuff down here, but all of this is really, really important. It's where the wheels meet the road. It's where the connection is. Each one of these is a layer of abstraction, and we are able to have possibly, we as humans have built possibly the most complex creations known to mankind. I would argue that our computing systems, our internet infrastructure is as complex as any physical manifestation. Any bridge, any steamliner, any airplane, any spaceship pales in comparison to the number of layers of abstraction of complexity in our whole ecosystem of networks plus computers plus servers plus all that stuff. It's amazing how many layers make it work. And the other reason that's really important about this, I'll get off of the slide after a second. This is like living in an apartment building in New York City. You're sandwiched in one of these slices, and all you really care about is the guy above you, or the person above you, family above you, making noise, baby crying at night, and the people below you. How does that connect back with this? If I ask you to do data path and control, and I draw this picture, all this means is you are going to make use of the layer below you, because there's probably an API that they've exported to you. You're going to make use of all the digital design that you have. By using that, you're going to build this middle layer, your floor, and serve the users above you, who are, in this case, processor, memory, and I/O system. Does that make sense? So it's just like software, right? You're at this middle, you're writing a library, you use some of the things with the lower level library routines, and then you release some interface or API for the people who are going to be calling you. That's all it is. And we build many, many layers of these. There's about 100 more layers in terms of software above that, you know, animation routines and graphics routines and windowing systems. All that stuff is hidden in this picture. All of that is what makes the layers of complexity. All of that is because of the most important word. If there's one word you leave 61C with, it is that last word on the slide. Abstraction. Same word we said was the most important word in 61A, same word in 61C. We would not be able to build this massively complex, massively wonderful system without abstraction. So, what are you kind of going to be doing? Well, that's nice and fluffy, Dan. What are we actually going to see? What are we going to do? Well, here's an example. Here's that layer again, right? You start at the high-level language C. People would say, Dan, C is not a high-level language. It's higher than the low ones below it, but you're right. There are ones above it. We'll call C a higher-level language for this slide. Here's some examples of C. You might know what this piece of code does. Swaps neighbors, right? Swaps neighbors in an array, okay? Well, guess what? If you compile this down, if you compile this down to assembler, that's exactly what this does. This looks like garbledygook, right? It looks like Greek to you, unless you're Greek, in which case it looks like some other language, but the point is, it looks like some unknown language, right? All right. You then assemble this down to ones and zeros. You don't know the blue level, but you will. You don't know the red level, but you will. Now, this then runs on hardware. How do you build this hardware? Well, you have some instruction set architecture that's defined. That's the big pink guy. And then you have to build hardware that actually supports that. It actually is able to handle an argument, the equivalent of a load word, and actually do the load word in your hardware. All right? So you're going to have to build some hardware at the black box level. Very black box level. You're dragging around register files and ALUs and delays and flip-flops. You're dragging along big picture things. How are those built? Those are built on the layer below it, which is a logic circuit, and you're dealing with that. you folks are going to understand the entire piece. You probably are sitting, if you came in only from 621A, you don't know any of these pieces. You don't know C. You certainly don't know these two languages. People who are graduating from 621C know how to read this. I kid you not. They can look at this and say, oh, oh, there's a bug there. That should be a one. Am I kidding? You think they laugh. And they're not, I'm not kidding, right? If I say, this is supposed to do a swap of two neighboring guys, they'd say, oh yeah, that's supposed to be a one. You're going to be able to do that. Isn't that crazy? But that's, you're going to do that. I'm going to empower you to do that. It's unbelievable how much fun that is. You're also going to be able to build hardware to support that. If given an instruction set architecture, you're going to be able to use black box guys and put it together to build that. That's going to be project 3, as I said, as well as understanding how these are built. That's some crazy stuff. Now, I think of this as the connection between the hand of God in software and the hand of man. And actually, I think of this picture as really the connection, all right? 621C, for many of you, intellectually, is the point where the software meets the hardware, allowing you intellectually to understand, at least find a path, from up here in scheme and something happens to literally ones and zeros changing, and you could teach someone that entire path. Oh man, this is going to be great. Your entire class is going to have a culmination where that connection happens for you. And when that happens, we're going to celebrate in a way that you have never celebrated before in any other class, I promise you. So remember that day. All right. This is going to be a great class, guys, seriously. There are five parts of any computer. You want to memorize these. You want to put these on a tattoo. I don't recommend the kind that actually damages the skin, but I understand some henna inks that can work very well. I would suggest all of you think about this as a tattoo. I certainly can't take a tattoo away from you on an exam. Whoop, I tattooed some things. Nope, well, tattoo is part of the exam. You can do that. So, five parts of the computer. You will understand all five of these. We're going to hit each one of these in a series of weeks. There's a processor, memory, and then there's I.O. Okay, devices, which is on the right side, I.O. That's, again, where the wheels meet the road in terms of the computer. The memory is where we store stuff, and the processor has the two pieces of it, the brain and the brawn, which actually calculate things and move data around. We'll see all these in detail. This is called a von Neumann architecture, and it has been the architecture that's dominated since his day, which I believe is in the 40s. So John von Neumann is this brilliant, brilliant physicist and early computer person who helped us understand what this was and also where the bottlenecks are. And people have kind of thought about that and try to come up with alternatives to this and clever things. But it all comes down to the core von Neumann architecture. Just like everybody is driving what we call the auto engine. Unless you're driving a Mazda, which has the Wankel rotary, you're driving the same engine that Otto back in the early 1900s, invented, called the auto engine. Same idea. It's all from the same idea. All right, so let's talk a little bit about how these things work. In computers, you have different levels. If you were to open up and break open, in fact, I encourage you, all of you, if you've never actually opened a computer, please do that. Save your backup, your stuff first, and then crack a case. But, I mean, I want to make sure you guys are tinkerers by the end of this class. You guys should be able to feel comfortable opening up a computer and pointing at all the pieces of it. Here are the big pieces. You have these integrated circuits. These guys look like little bugs. They have plugs on the side of them. Okay, memory elements, they're calculating elements, interfaces. You have printed circuit boards. You've probably seen that, the little green things. You plug those in. You buy those for different things like graphics cards. You have power supplies. They regulate you, give you a nice even DC current. AC is an alternating current. DC is direct current, so a nice constant voltage, usually in the low threes, two threes. You should be in the fives. When I is that me? Okay, it's not me. Okay, somebody's phone. I thought it was my phone. He's calling me. Then you have the rack that kind of keeps it all together, right? And then you have connectors and cables that make it all work. You should be able to point at all those things and say, oh, that's an IC, that's a circuit board. These basically covers all the things. I don't have disks on this list, but we'll talk about disks actually later in the course. All right. If you're actually going to get deeper into that, we're talking about the processor. This is what the processor comes out. When Intel comes out with the i9 chip, which I think the last I looked was like going to be $1,000 for that. $1,000 for the i9 chip. Here are the numbers we have. So you typically buy, if you're kind of going to buy from Intel directly, the actual bare die. That then gets put in a package for a couple reasons. Heat dissipation. You also, these lines are too small, and so you have these really fine wires that let you connect to the circuit board a little easier. So we usually put the chip in a package. But in terms of the bare die, here are some of the things. The most important thing from a certain class on the double E side, they'd say the most important thing is something called the feature size. This is the overall geometry on the side, but the feature size. The feature size is how tight can two wires be. Okay? The smaller the feature size, the smaller you can make the chip. You can make the same chip and just decrease the feature size, and the chip goes from being this big to being this big, which is much smaller, lower power, cheaper to produce, all that stuff. So we're at the level of 45 nanometers. You guys have no idea how small 45 nanometers. How much does it think a human hair is? How many of these can you fit in one human hair? What's the size of a human hair, roughly? Like roughly the -6, right? So that's like 1,000 of these in one human hair. Many more than that, probably, because you're down at that level. So they have a path. People who are making chips, making these dyes, have a path where they every couple of years try to get smaller and smaller. And so there's a path. They've already staked out the path. They already know where they're going to go. After 45 nanometers, it's going to be 32, then 22, and then 16. They already know this in advance. They're going to be trying to engineer towards that in the future. Before 45 was, I believe, 65, and most of the things are made at 65 now, but 45 is the kind of the cutting edge pretty much now. A lot of transistors, 1,000 mega, this is like 100 million to a billion transistors, a ton of logic gates, many conductive layers, kind of neat in there, and for the most part, things are now CMOS. Okay, they used to not be CMOS, but CMOS has now dominated the industry in terms of the actual way. EE, give me a number that tells you more about this one. 45? 405. EE 405, as I'm hearing? E7? EE what? 40. Come on, 40. 40 teaches more about this stuff. All right. That's on the other side of the Hearst. I don't go there. Okay. So what we've got... No, I kid. I got a degree in double E. I'm just joking. Okay. So printed circuit boards. So remember, we talked about the circuit boards as being one of the pieces of this. Here is just some things. By the way, I got a chance. I was so fortunate. I worked at a company called Prime Computer. Went out of business. I had nothing to do with it, but I got a nice... Prime, at the end of the summer program, they made hardware and software. They let us actually go to the hardware plant. I got to actually walk on the floor of where they made this stuff. Unbelievably cool process. I saw this fountain of solder. Like, you imagine a fountain where the water goes this and splashes? Not fountains of solder. They go, and they're like... constant. It's this crazy thing where the solder is kind of being circulated like this, and it's hitting up and then splashing up and out, but it's just like coming up and being flat. And then the board just slides across and just barely skims the solder, and that makes the connection between the chips that have been put in and the actual board. Crazy! And all this is toxic and poisonous fumes, and I haven't, you know, 9 arms on the bottom of my kids. But the thing is, it was a cool, at the time, it was a cool thing to see. So we talked about what the purpose of these printed circuit boards are, and this is that, you know, if you go and you buy a graphics card, you're buying a printed circuit board, so this is kind of standard. All right, now it's time for some information that you may or may not know about. This is Gordon Moore. He was sitting in Wheeler Hall, I'm sure. Wheeler was one of the early classrooms. He was sitting in Wheeler Hall back in the 40s. He founded Intel. He has been one of the most significant people in our entire field. There's his face. Remember this guy. He's a big name. We often don't spend enough time talking about history and, you know, looking back at the past. Make sure you know about Gordon Moore. He predicted that the number of transistors that you would have on a single chip would double every, he said, 1 to 2 years. He claims he never said it a year and a half, but it's 1 to 2 years. He later adjusted to say 2 years. This is the curve showing how right he was. Essentially, he said it right around here. Like, things, you know, this is the 70s, early 70s. This is out of focus. Here we go. 70s, 80s, somewhere in here he said it, right? Somewhere in here where he could look back a little bit and kind of say, I see a line here, right? By the way, this is a log graph, right? This is linear log graph. This is years linearly and a log of the number of transistors in an integrated circuit. So he predicted that. And it turns out that it was the most prophetic statement in our industry, because for the next, this is 80, folks, for the next 30 years, he was right. Amazing that he was so on the money. And in fact, what I believe is people in the engineering field said, oh, Moore's law says we better be there. You know, the curve says we need to be there. So at least as we're engineering it, let's actually make sure we get exactly that point. So I think they kind of went hand in hand to make it exactly perfect line. But that's an amazing quote. It's amazing. It's amazingly held true. It's amazing that we've been able to continue to double every 2 years. And think about this. That's crazy. If I say, all right, go run a 100-meter dash. Oh, okay, 15 seconds. Great. I want you to double your speed, right, in 2 years. No, I'll give you 2 years. Go ahead. Take 2 years. Double the speed. And somehow you do it. Somehow you train and bionic and you go and you get in 7.5 seconds. I say, great job, high five, okay. Double again in 2 meters. Right? Ah! You can't be done. I've got that on tape, so we got that whole thing. So, can't be done, right? It can't be done, but we have somehow. I don't know how it's been amazing. I bow to the engineers in the industry that's made this happen. Now, people often make the mistake of thinking that anything in the computer engineering world that looks like this curve, linear, log, and looks like a straight line, which is an exponential curve, right? Doubling every 2 years, obviously exponential, is Moore's law. The average student coming out of a machine structures course will say that. Oh, here's the disk capacity over time. That's Moore's law. It's not. Only transistors on a chip is Moore's law. But almost everything else has also followed a beautiful straight line in a linear log plot. So we won't call it Moore's law. We'll call it Moore's law-like from now on, just to make clear about it, okay? So Moore's law is important, and it's only transistors on a chip. Question?
Does it apply to solid-state disks?
It applies to solid-state disks. We haven't actually seen enough numbers from that, but we can take a look back and kind of see whether the solid-state devices, we're going to talk about that in our...
It's steeper
for solid-state. This is Scott Beamer, who's a head TA, who's right on the cusp of everything, and he's telling me it's steeper, which is very cool. So we'll actually be fun to kind of, when we get, we're going to have a discussion about that at the end of class. By the way, I should say, questions anytime. I love it. I need some hands. I need more interactivity from class rather than a boring, passive Dan lectures and makes you laugh. I want to have some great stuff happening here. So it's steeper for solid-state disk. We'll talk about that. Here's another curve, all right? Linear, log. How about the performance of a single processor where the performance is measured by this cool thing called SPECINT? We'll talk about that, how to measure performance. Oh, look at this, folks. Also exponential. One interesting thing is, you know, there's some noise on here when they were doing the VAX world. And then, look at this. This is ridiculous, folks. That is unbelievable how tight that is to the 1.52 a year. This is a different curve, so it's not doubling every year, but this is 1.52 a year. Look at this. Except for something happens, oh, right about there, 2003. Anybody know what that is? That's a brick wall. Everyone in computer engineering knows that as the brick wall. You will now know it as the brick wall, okay? At this point, they can't continue to squeeze juice from that lemon. The lemon is a single processor, and they said, we can't squeeze more performance out of it. It's slowing down. See the purple line? Slowing down. How much slower? 3 times slower than the previous guy at 1.2 times a year. So they said, we can't do that. That's too slow a growth. What can we do to get, you know, to get ravenous performance out? The way to do that? Go parallel. If you can't go forward, you go to the side. You're like a toothpaste, kind of. You can't get it more there, and just kind of squeeze out the side. Exactly what it is, right? Why is that? What's the cause of the brick wall? Give me one word.
Heat.
That's right. Heat. We cannot dissipate the heat that these single processors at their, by the way, one of the things we also have done is cranked up the clock rate. As you crank the clock rate up, the heat also cranks up as well. So everything, smaller things hotter, faster clock rate hotter, the amount of heat was nearing the amount, like heat per kind of cubic millimeter, is nearing, in the processor, right there at the center of it, is nearing the amount in a rocket. Like imagine kind of a rocket engine, it's nearing the level of heat in a rocket engine. And your job, but small, I mean, it's obviously not massive, it's small, and their job is to dissipate that, right, to cool it so it doesn't melt everything around it, right? It doesn't overheat itself. So you have conduction, you have fluid, you have oil-submerged CPUs, I've seen these things, to try to deal with that heat issue. A lot of these high-end game machines have that, right? It's crazy stuff. So very important, you understand about the sea change, more cores, you go parallel rather than try to squeeze more from the lemon. What happens in terms of technology when you graduate? Okay, let's see how much time we're doing for here. We're doing 440. All right, keep up. Slide 14. All right, keep up. I'm on 24. I'm actually on time here. So let's take a look. When you graduate, you're going to notice that a processor, the amount of memory you have, and the amount of disk you have has also been growing at exponential rates. In discussion, by the way, you have learned about these prefixes. Yes, am I giving nods to the TAs? Nods to the TAs? You all have learned this in discussion. If you haven't, if you somehow missed discussion, you didn't get my email to attend discussion, we have handouts. Hopefully you get this stuff. You all understand this, right? So, what a processor? Processor has you know, doubling every year and a half, but it's slowing, as I showed you in the slide previously. 100 times performance in the last decade, and when you graduate, 4 gigahertz, 32 cores. This is my brother. This is Dan's prediction. This is me getting to be the guy who predicts what the Apple tablet's going to be in a week. This is me predicting what your computer is going to be like in 4 years. I predict 4 gigahertz, 32 cores. That's just me throwing that out there. Memory, doubling every 2 years. Okay, so that's doing pretty well. We talked about that a little bit. 64 times in the last decade. I believe 128 GB. Okay. Notice that this is giga and that's GB. Part of that, hopefully, we'll talk about a little bit later in the class. Sometimes they use the IEC, which is the guy on the right. Sometimes they use the normal SI units, which is the guy on the left. Disk, doubling every year. Are you kidding me? Boy, I look at the disk manufacturer and say, I'm not worthy, because I don't know how. That's the Wayne world, nobody knows. Okay, that's before you. All right, so let's go back, Dan. Mental note, these guys were born in 1990. All right, so what we got? 87. All right, so some people know that. All right, so I don't know how they've been doing this. It's crazy. We'll talk a little bit about disk at the end, but they have been doing a gangbuster job in terms of getting their stuff up there. I believe 8 terabytes is going to be what you'll have, but not necessarily in one disk. We might not get one disk that gets to that, but I certainly think that you're going to have at least multiple disk standard in that, possibly in a RAID. All right. What are the things you're going to learn in 61C? Here are the big ideas you'll learn. You're going to say, Dan, I saw that, you know, the whole hand of God handed me. I got that part. But here are the other pieces. More abstraction, okay, the 5 parts of the computer, we talked about that. Data can be anything. A really big idea that, wait, data can be anything? Yes, indeed it can. That's pretty cool. Locality and how important it is. Anybody who has a backpack understands locality, having the cool stuff that you use recently with you, right? That's pretty obvious. Parallelism is obviously the guy staring us in the face. We got to talk about that. How do you compile and interpret? GCC is really more than just taking source code and making it executable. It actually has multiple steps to that. We'll talk about that. And how you can lie and cheat, and also how you can do a good job of performance measurement and talking about how performance people talk about that. You'll also learn C, and that's what I mentioned before. I believe you can come straight out of 61A and hit this, like straight out of Compton, straight out of 61A, bam, learning C, doing this, okay? Assembly level programming, so you're going to learn C and assembler, as well as hardware design. So you're going to actually get in there and start building some design. That's going to be really cool. So it's not just gooey-goobity software, even though the gooey-goobity is lower level with assembler, it's actually building some hardware. You'll be using a simulator, but that's pretty cool, okay? You have to cross the Hurst street to actually get some real hardware out of that. So Yoda says, always in motion is the future. So I've been waiting right there. Wish you knew Howard Cosell, because I got them right in my back pocket here. All right, so what is this line? Anybody have a guess on this line? Attention span. Attention span. Hey, you guys are good. This is great. You're supposed to go, huh? What? See, that's the joke of where you're. Okay, yeah, you're down here now. Okay. Attention over time. You looked at the slides, which is the answer. So what happens here? We can either take a break, or we can make it interactive. And thus, we have the interactive device of the year, the iClicker. Okay, this is something called peer instruction. Some people say, oh, the iClicker is just, turn your iClickers on, by the way. The iClicker is just for attendance. Wrong. It is about, hopefully, I will go through my slides and have a couple of examples every lecture. Only going to have one today because I had a lot to cover, but a lot of times for us to talk about something, have a question, and get some feedback. Are you getting it or not? I'll just, rather than have a slide where I tell you it, why don't I see what you think about it and have you guess it, and then we'll talk about that afterwards. Kind of cool. Here's how we'll usually run these. I will let you think about it. I'll show up a question. It's only 5 options, so it can't be that bad. You have a 1 in 20, you know, 1 in 5 chance of just guessing. So 1 or 2 minutes to decide yourself. Then you will vote. I won't show you what that vote is. Then you will talk about it to your neighbors. You have to reach consensus. It's not like, well, I still think A and they still think B. No, you have to agree. Then you hold your hand up together and you vote the same thing together the second time, and I see how you converge. Kind of cool. I may cut that out if that isn't working so well, but that has worked well in the past. The transmitters are from the ASUC bookstore. If you buy them, and I said in the email, if they use them next year, they'll buy back for half the price. It's only actually like $20 or so. So hopefully not too bad. There's the iClickers. iClickers are all on, right? Let's hit this. Here is my question about C programming, right? I said about this prerequisite chain. I, student, am a solid C programmer. I actually said I am a solid C programmer without voting student, and I realized, are you voting for my ability as a programmer or your? So, I student. Okay. I robot. So, I student am a solid C programmer. Here we go. 5 options. So what this is called a Likert scale, whether you agree or disagree with that statement, all right? Strong disagree means it's a wrong statement, which means I've never coded and I actually don't know Java or C++. Most people coming straight out of 621A are that category. Then I know a little Java, that's B, I code a little in C, but not a lot, it's B, that's C. D is I code a fair bit, and E is I coded a lot, I probably teach the C section in discussion, okay? So let me try, this is the first time ever, I'm clicking start, and I'm now waiting for, and things are coming in, this is awesome! And watch, I can actually show you in real time how you're voting. And don't change, and by the way, here's a cool thing, you can actually change your vote, and my thing will receive that and update it. Right. So everybody go for E. Everybody go E. Watch your grip. Go. Yay, E. Okay. Now go back to the true value. Now go back to the true. Is this crazy? Is this cool? Every class, we're going to have a lot of this. Look how easy that was, right? I don't have to load in something into this. Bam, real time. Don't lie. This is what we got. All right. So let's see. This is interesting, huh? This is very informative to me and to you. The cool thing is you get to see what, you know, you get to find out, am I the only one, right? And the people in E are saying, yeah, I am the only one, pretty much. All right. That's okay, they're in the strongest camp, so that's fine. All right, so we need to slow, you know, I know Java, that's mostly most of the people coming out of 621B, probably the A, this 15 or 14 of people coming straight out of A, coincidentally the same name, and we're in the middle. So we basically have to support the A group a lot, and that's only 70 people, so it's not that bad. We can do pretty well. All right, is that cool? Stop, hide, back to this. That was really fast, and I love it. Yay, iClicker, you've done a good job, folks. Okay, you can put them away. We're done with the clickers for today. But we'll do a lot more next time. That was just a little sample to get you rolling. But definitely go buy them. It's going to be a lot of fun, and that's good. And I'm recording when you do that, and I'm giving you credit, extra credit at the end of the semester for voting. That's good stuff, so definitely buy them. Question?
How do you know who you are?
How do I know who you are? You're going, that's a great question. You're going to go on to iClicker.com. First big button says register my clicker. It'll ask you your name and your student ID, which is how I connected with my gradebook, and that's all it needs. In theory, I can also connect this with BSpace so that you can actually see how you voted and whether it's correct or not. I'm not taking any grades based on this. It's mostly, you know, informal, asking you questions during lecture. So it's not so critical we connect with BSpace, but that might be fun for you guys to see how you voted all throughout that to see if that's right. Question, yes?
Can you use an iClicker from previous years?
You may use an iClicker from previous years. You may also co-buy it with a roommate who happens to have it for another class, and then you just happen to use it for this class and they use it for their class. That works also. It's cool. Okay? Yes, question?
I'm missing the serial number on the back.
If you don't have a serial number, talk to iClicker folks. I don't know what to do about that. All right. Sorry? Oh, actually, sorry, you know, come to my office hours as a way for you to click the button and me to get the serial number on my software. I know that, so thank you for that. Yeah, so we'll talk and I'll get you in there. All right, there's an idea that I came up with a couple of years ago. This is my idea, this 8 button. By the way, we're only at 24 slides, so like we're almost done, guys. We're doing great for time. We'll actually have some questions afterwards. APA, EPA, there's a phrase in the Latino culture which is like wepa, it means like celebration, yeah, let's do it. And I wanted a way to give students credit for being good citizens. What does that mean? It means coming to lecture, it means coming to discussion, it means that being really active and asking questions. I saw some questions here already, I want that, I want more questions. I want people coming to discussion and asking questions and being really interactive, not being a bump on a log. I want, that's effort, right? I'm sorry, that's participation, that's the P. I want effort, I want you to come to office hours, TAs and mine. I want you to do all the homeworks and do all the labs and do all the discussions. You certainly have a right to just say, yeah, I'm blowing this lab off. But I want to give you credit. If you do every one, I want to give you credit somehow. So if you put in a lot of effort, and we all the TAs and staff see that, we want to give you credit there too. Altruism, I want you to help each other. This is about creating a learning community and building each other so that we all together, holding hands, cross the finish line with A's. This course, you'll see in a slide or two, is an absolute graded course, just like A, 61A, 61B, and CS3. It means that I set up the standard, and then you just try to get that top grade. It's not a curve. No curve. Those of you coming in from other schools may be used to a curve. That's not how we work at Berkeley in the lower division. We are absolute graded. So that means it doesn't hurt you to help your neighbor. I want you to help your neighbor as much as possible. If your TAs or I see that, either in news group or in the lab, we're going to give you some A credit for the EPA, okay? When it's all done, you get some points. These are called EPA sprinkle points. TAs know about them. I know about them. You never know what they are. Because I don't want you kind of groveling like, oh, I got a 3, I want a 4. You know, it's not about that. It's about being a good citizen and us kind of noticing from afar and sprinkling some points. They're not enough to kind of change a full grade, but they are, if you're on the line, can push you up. You know, if you're an A in the high A, it can give you an A+ or any grade boundary can push you above that. Okay? However, doing nothing, being the worst citizen, doesn't take any points away from you. It's only extra credit. You can still get the highest A+ in the class, right? You can still get an A+ with no trouble if you ace everything without APA, right? That would be someone who just blows off the class, shows up for the midterms only, and doesn't, you know, whatever, all that stuff. All the bad things you could do, you can still do well if you ignore this. Your voting will count for effort and participation. I mean, your voting will count, right? Some part of the voting will count for this for your extra credit. So that's kind of how I give you points back for putting some money into buying those clickers. All right. This is where we get all somber. This is where we talk about cheating. And they've asked me to have this slide up to be really clear about this, to have a very clearly defined cheating policy. Cheating is not just having a digital copy of somebody else's stuff in your account and submitting it as yours. It's also giving somebody yours. What do you mean? Like, what do you mean giving? Well, think of an exam setting. If you and I are sitting an exam, and I hold my exam so you can see it, kind of I'm as guilty as you are, right, for looking at it. And maybe even more so in that argument. So any giver is equally culpable as any receiver, right? If you cheat and we get you, I'm going to call you to the office. We'll have the TAs in there. We'll talk about it. Whether you admit to it or not, we're going to send that case to the Office of Judicial Affairs, okay? So I have to. It's my job. I have to do that. I've done it. You know, I've taught this course 8 times. There were times where I pulled 20 students in, and every one of them said, "Yep, we shared the same project too." And essentially, if you admit it to me, then all I do is exactly this: I zero out your APA forever. I give you negative points for that assignment. I take your wrist. I slap the back of it, and we move on. It's a mistake. People do that. Okay. If you don't admit to it, then I submit it up to the Office of Judicial Affairs. There's the caliber hearing. You get a student advocate, like a lawyerish, you know, acts on your behalf. If they find you guilty, immediate F, like really bad, right? But just this project or assignment may just cause you, you know, to bump down from an A+ to an A or an A- to a B+. My point is, if I call you in, be very forthcoming with that, and I will tell these people. If you admit to it, and you do, and you did it, and you admit to it, I will tell these guys, hey guys, don't throw the book at them, don't do anything to them, I've resolved it internally, right? I'm trying to help you. I've resolved internally, I've dinged them, I've got them on the wrist, just note it in the future. They note it in case you're cheating in all the classes, then the bad things can happen. So that's all. Noting it does nothing but put a little letter in your file, nobody else sees it. However, if you get busted, and you don't admit to it, and then they find you guilty, I tell them not only F in the class, but throw the book at them. What are the things that means? It means you might have to write a letter to the Daily Cal talking about your cheating thing and what you've learned from it. It means community service, and I can say how many hours, depending on how egregious it can be. All those things, you don't want to go there. So please don't do that. And what it means is, don't do these things. Don't run out of time and then pick up the output or grab something from a friend. Also, don't give it to a friend. It is your own stuff. What's the limit of cheating? The limit is, what's allowed, Dan? Obviously, not working together, I mean, working together on something and sharing that is bad. What kind of collaboration can you do? And the line I always say is, you can ask questions walking out of lecture. So somebody, you know, there's a new project comes out, and you both read the specs, and you're walking out of lecture, and you kind of talk about how you would design it, softly. That's the level. As soon as it gets to writing something down and coding it up, that's the line you've crossed if you share that stuff. Does that make sense? I just make sure that's clear and we can move on. Okay, sorry that we had to do that. All right, my goal, I always want to have my goals and expectations as an instructor. I want to make this the greatest course in your undergraduate experience. And I've actually heard back from people who graduated and said, Dan, 61C was the hallmark of my undergraduate experience. I learned more, I had more fun, it was just a mind-stretching thing. 61A stretched me in this kind of cool way of all those big ideas, but 61C, I understood how it all worked. It was awesome, and maybe even shifted me from being a pure CS to kind of being more CS plus a little double E on the side, because EE is really great stuff too. So I want to have a really fun, and in almost every aspect, I'm going to have student-centric policies. That's really cool, okay? So one of the examples I'm going to have is you're going to have slip days, okay? That means that if you're late for an assignment, you have a couple of days in your pocket that you can kind of pay, and you can submit late without penalty, if that makes sense. You'll use up a slip day. It's kind of like a reward ticket or something. And once you use a slip day, you don't have it anymore, and they come in units of days, not minutes or hours, but days. All right. I have to make sure that your class is as outstanding and as qualified, graduating from 621C, as every other class has been. And I've tried this course now, I think, 8 times, so I love this class. I know this stuff cold. And I want to make sure you are just as good as every other class. So I have to maintain the standard, which is there's going to be a B minus average. We say, but Dan, there's no curve. Right. I give you hard exams, and I've done this enough times that I give you hard exams just so that the average is B minus. If the average is above B minus, what do? Nothing. You get to keep your above B minus average, class. Yay, Dan. Remember, pro student policy. If it's below B minus, what do? I push it up until it's B minus. So you always get, at the very least, a B minus, and maybe more if I happen to give you easy exams. Or you happen to be an outstandingly awesome class, then you get your A's. If you all get an A, I will sign off on an A for the whole class. I'll do it. You stop me. Try to stop me. Try to stop me. You can't stop me. You can't, Jerry. You can't. All right. That's Seinfeld. All right. So I also want to be, I strive to be a 7.0 guy. It's never been done in the undergraduate world, and it's never been done certainly with large classes. It's really easy to have students think it's impersonal because I don't know the names of 310 students. I'm going to try, but it's going to be hard. So it's harder the larger class to get these high numbers, but I want to be. Every single class, I'm going to strive to be the best instructor I can and make this as fun as I can make it, showing you videos, making it relevant, showing you news of the day, all that stuff, giving you handouts, you don't have to write anything down, all that stuff to make this the most awesome class. If I am ever dipping below, like I want to basically peg the meter internally as the 7. And if at any point you're starting to kind of fade down, like you're starting to lose energy to the 6s or 5s, tell me what's happening. What am I doing that's not making you feel like this is a 7.0 experience? And I will try to change to get back to 7, okay? So if the meter ever stops being pegged, you talk to me and I will change. I really do want to make be a 7 go for you guys. I have 5 outstanding teaching assistants. Let's turn the lights up, get these guys to stand up. These guys are outstanding. Every one of them has been an undergraduate in this class. It's almost unheard of to have every one of my TAs to be kind of my disciple, coming through my thing, and they are now, these are the guys. This is Scott, Eric, Michael, Long, and Bing. Woo! These guys are so talented. They know so much about 621C. In fact, I'm going to be traveling quite a bit, and they're going to hear from them. They're going to give you the lectures when I'm gone. Obviously, I'm not here. I can't give lectures. And you're going to like, wait, they took over for Dan, and they were just as good. Uh-huh. And now I have to watch out for my job because of that good. All right. Thanks, guys. That was awesome. Good stuff, guys. We have a great staff this year. It's really going to be great. In summary, by the way, before I go to the summary, I'm supposed to say 61B and all the other classes, 621A and CS3, need lab assistance. So if you've taken 621B, I don't care how you did. You can get a C. But if you care about 621B or any other course, and you want to help your fellow student, sign up to be a lab assistant. The way you do is you send email or visit Jenny J at EECS. Everybody write this down. Jenny J at EECS. His name is Jenny Jones, and she coordinates all the lab assistants. The 621B instructor said, Dan, I'm panicking. I got no lab assistants. I want you all to go do that. All help out the 621B and A and CS3. She'll be able to handle all that things. You get units for that work. Every 3 hours you work as a lab assistant, you get 1 unit of work. So I want you to all go do that, and that would be, I'll leave the lights up for the last slide. It's fine. So go help your fellow student, right? Because obviously you're going to have lab assistants here. Those are people who took the class like you a couple semesters before helping you. Give back. The point of this is give back, right? In summary, we have seen some, look at this, 5 o'clock on the dot. Oh, I love it. It's just so perfect. All right. What do we got? What we've seen is an unbelievably rapid improvement in technology along every dimension, performance, capacity, cost. Actually, cost is kind of stay fixed. Aside from cost. But aside from cost, everything, well, I mean, per bit cost, but in terms of you can still buy a computer like you buy a high, when I was young, I bought a computer in 86, before you all born, 86, my first computer, a Macintosh SE20, for $2,200. And I then bought a computer last year $2,200 workstation class, but still, the same price. You can buy cheap, you know, netbooks and stuff. Anyway, the point is, amazing, amazing advancement in technology, all thanks to the computers engineers of days gone by. Moore's Law is only transistors, right? Five parts of a computer, that's it. We'll see you on Friday. Stay out of the rain, guys. Thanks. Woo! Go 61C. 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 All right.